You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Toast Gamers podcast. My name is Cyril. Today, I'm joined by Billy. Say hello, Billy.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Very well, mate. Very well. Considering Liverpool have just got through to the FA Cup final and the quadruple is still on, my friend.
Very much so.
Yeah. Also, I promise not to just abandon you in StreamYard and leave you alone like Jed did.
Yeah, thank you for that.
For any listeners that aren't aware, you need to go to the Total Screamers Twitter page, or I don't know if it was on Instagram as well, and see Billy's reaction for Jed just cutting off, leaving without saying goodbye. It's just fucking mwah, perfect. Righty-o, Billy boy, let's get into this. We got FA Cup to talk about. Liverpool have just defeated Manchester City in a... I think the scoreline flatters Man City a little bit.
For a
3-2 win for Liverpool. Though it was a quite a squeaky bum time last sort of 5 or 6 minutes in the match. The first half of this was probably one of the best I've seen from Liverpool this year, in a sort of 12-month calendar sort of basis, because it was very impressive. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. I was really impressed with how Liverpool came out. You know, last week it was very much a case of Man City coming out and attacking them. Liverpool were a bit like, oh, hang on, what's going on here? We're not used to this. And then this week it was the same, but just the other way around.
Yeah.
Liverpool just came out ready, out the gates, strong. And Man City, it seemed to me like Man City were a bit like, They weren't expecting it, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they just got caught. And, I mean, you don't help yourself when you give Mane. That wasn't the first goal, actually, was it?
Second goal.
Yeah. I don't know what's happened to me. I can't remember the first goal.
It was Konate. You probably can't remember it because it was so early on in the match, but it was Konate. Third goal we scored in April. We'll come on to talk about Konate a little bit, because I think he's actually going to be a bit of a proper player, you know, real player. But yeah, carry on your thoughts of the match in general.
And then, you know, you score that goal and you kind of expect Man City to come out a bit more, but Liverpool just dictated the play and Man City really didn't have a lot, if anything, to offer in that first half. And then you give away such a soft goal for the second, and then You try and keep it tight then, because at 2-0, if Man City get a goal back, then it's 2-1.
Yeah,
It's game on again. And then that third goal was just spectacular, wasn't it?
It was beautiful.
The diagonal ball from Trent is one of the best passes I think I've ever seen on a football pitch.
He does them for fun as well.
Yeah, the play that followed it, then Thiago's pass over to Mane, and then the volley into the bottom corner. I mean, what a goal.
I love those.
It was
like,
just game over from them, wasn't it?
Yeah. See those outside of the boot volleys that just kind of like they're traveling, but they're kind of floating almost.
Yeah.
They're just superb goal. I thought the first half was absolutely tremendous by Liverpool. I thought they just it's very rarely you see the colours of Man City these days dominated in that fashion, but Liverpool were by far away the better team in that first half. I mean, City maybe started quite well, but after a few minutes, Liverpool kind of got a foot on the ball, and just City was nowhere near it. Shocked, but like you said, but that is something I'm going to come on to is City. Well, Pep rotated heavier than he should have for this match, quite clearly.
Definitely.
I don't know why he didn't prioritise this match, given it's a semi-final at Wembley. Poor Zach Steffen, like, I've heard a lot of good things about him. He's the international US keeper. He's highly rated by the US fans, obviously. I think this is either his only third game of the year or he's only played three games previous to this. It's a big ask for him to come in. Especially because there's a narrative around Liverpool and City now, so it's like the pressure comes in those games alone, you know. And I mean, I don't grudge the other rotations. Fernandinho's an extremely experienced player, although I think he struggled in this match. I don't think he had a good game at all. Zinchenko is a capable player. He's a very strong player for Ukraine. But Zach Steffen, the error leading to goal, and even outside that, he had a pretty difficult day.
I think the first goal as well was poor from him. I think after the header from Konate, it almost seems if he just let it go over his head, there was no real attempt to make a save.
Yeah.
I feel like if I think they said it at half time as well. If Ederson was in goal, I don't think that goal goes in.
He's a great shot stopper. And Ederson, although he does play, you know, quite, you know, dangerously with his feet, we'll say dangerously, because he's quite happy to hold on to the ball for quite a long time. Yeah. And so is Alisson.
As well.
He's opposite number. Listen, Alisson and Ederson are virtually the same keeper with a few minor differences, to be quite honest. I would say Alisson is a bit more comfortable with the ball at his feet, and I would say Ederson's distribution is a little bit better than Alisson's. But other than that, they are just two top-class keepers. I mean, they're in the top, I don't know, but you'd put them in the top five in the world, at the very least, maybe, you know, at the end of this season, they might be taking that place as, you know, now that obviously Neuer's exited the Champions League, you know, one of these keepers could be a Champions League winning keeper this season. So,
Very shocked if neither of them are, to be honest with you.
You don't need to rest keepers either. There's virtually no reason to rest a keeper. So why? What does Pep get from? If I was Pep, I would play Zach. It'd make more sense to me to play Zach Steffen in the final than in the semi-final against Liverpool.
Yeah,
because he's going to be either up against Palace or Chelsea. Palace and Chelsea are obviously going to play tomorrow, but that's an easier day than Liverpool, because it's not surrounded by this narrative. Maybe Chelsea and City have a bit of a narrative.
Understand why you'd say that, but I just think in an FA Cup, especially when you get to the latter stages, like you say, semi-final, final, I think in those situations, you just need to be playing your best team possible. And I understand that Man City had a very tough game midweek. You know, we've chatted about that before. And they've got a very competent squad. So I can understand the changes. You know, they had De Bruyne and Walker out injured, obviously. So changes are neither here or there outfield. But I think in the latter stages, you just play your best team possible. And Zach Steffen isn't in that for Man City. And if he was on the bench for the semi-final today, I don't think anyone would have brushed an eyelid. And we may be sat here. You may be disappointed. I may be disappointed. Jack Grealish. But yeah, I think if it could have been a completely different story if Ederson was playing. And I think Man City, they're probably not too fussed, but it was a chance to get silverware at the end of the day. You know, they've just got the title to fight for, along with the Champions League as well.
I mean, when was the last time like City didn't win either of the domestic trophies? Did they not win both of them?
What a question that is.
I mean, like, they always use these domestic trophies, League Cup and FA Cup, as momentum builders, just to get players used to winning, just to get like players used to lifting a cup. They normally go quite deep into the cups, and granted, they did go quite deep into the League Cup as well. But that means there's no domestic cup for City this season, which means obviously they can't get a treble. And really, all that's on for them is the Premier League and the Champions League, which I think, for me personally, adds another layer of pressure onto those competitions.
Absolutely, because you look at Man City, you know, they've just spent £100 million on one player. That they've got to be backing that spending up with titles and with trophies. You can't just be spending £100 million on a player and win the same amount of trophies that his club, his previous club is winning.
It would be, I don't know, is Grealish lifted silverware on a site shot yet? No.
Not with Man City, no.
Not in Man City, no. That'll be an interesting one. We can't write City off from winning a league. I think they're still probably the favourites for the league, and I still think they're maybe the favourites for the Champions League.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewellery from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Although I would personally put Liverpool as favourite, because I think Liverpool are very, very, very strong at tournament football. As they've proven this season, that once with the extra bodies, they've been able to compete in several fronts. Liverpool usually prioritise the Champions League because they need the money to Champions. With Champions League football comes a lot of money that helps Liverpool expand into the team it is now, with a team so deep that it can compete well into, you know, any competition. And obviously, Jurgen Klopp spoke a wee bit about how he's not really happy with the frequency of games, but he's definitely got a bigger squad. The squad is the same size. The talent within it is not equal to what it used to be. It's much, much better than it used to be. So it's not surprising to me that to see Liverpool, you know, sort of go deep into these competitions. But for City, I mean, we'll come on to Grealish. I think he actually played one of his best games in a City shirt for me today.
Which says a
because
lot,
I think, yeah, I think it kind of looks as if he suits going through the middle as almost a striker, or we'll call it a false nine. But when he's through the middle, I think it opens him up to kind of. I think he's a player that needs to be able to drift to either side, and once he gets locked onto sort of one partner play, he's easy to be found out a wee bit. Mm. You know, you can foul him early. You know, don't let him cut inside, or just show him down the byline or whatever, you know. It's, I think when he's got freedom to roam, he's a wee bit, he adds a few more dimensions that kind of makes him sort of worth that money, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting to me, because I thought personally that in the second half he was a lot better when he was out on that left hand side. I don't know if that's because maybe I'm more used to seeing him on that left hand side.
He's definitely stronger on the left hand side, but I think the freedom to drift in. You know,
it's an interesting one, yeah, because it's like I say, I'm more used to seeing him play on that left hand side, and for me personally, anyway, obviously everyone has their own opinions. I thought he was a lot stronger on that left hand side today.
He just looked
more neutral and more natural for him, and I think he got the goal as well, which would have boosted him. But I think in that second half, he got a little bit more freedom as well with the ball, so. And as well, that ball through to Gabriel Jesus, which he should have scored to make it 3-2. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a beautiful pass, and it was the Grealish of the Aston Villa days that I saw in that second half. Maybe not to the same extent, but it was certainly more of Grealish of old.
Hmm. I'm not totally convinced that he's going to go on and hit the heights maybe expected of him right now, but. He did, I don't know if you watched the build up to the match where he did an interview. I can't remember who he was doing an interview with, but he kind of spoke about how he's not really hit those numbers that you'd expect of a £100 million player. I mean, we say we'd expect of a £100 million player. You know, we look to Chelsea, Romelu Lukaku, who's, you know, was near enough £100 million. I don't know, like a couple of two or three million off £100 million, but and he's not delivering either. So it's. There's no sure things, especially when you're spending. You know, you look at Felipe Coutinho, who was bought for 140 and just could not get going. You know, I don't know if there's a link to players with big, huge price tags and the pressure that comes with them. Because when you go for the money like that, you're just, no matter what you say, like money doesn't matter in football, you're just viewed in a different light when you come in a big train.
I think it's the fact that you've all of a sudden got a price tag on you.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
It follows you.
And it's like Coutinho's this £140 million player. And I think with Coutinho, it was a bit different. From what I've heard, he's very shy. And so being the centre of attention, that £140 million player with the expectation that comes from Barcelona and the expectation of the shirt, I think it just got a bit too much for him. I didn't think that was going to be the case with Grealish, to be honest. I thought he'd set it alight. I think there's certainly something attached to the psychological thing of all of a sudden having that price tag put on
your back.
I
actually thought there'd be less risk of that happening because City have just a lot of expensive players in their ranks, you know. Even an Nathan Ake, I don't know how much he went for, 40-something million or something.
Yeah, 50 million, it's something
like
that.
You know, and it's that team is peppered with expensive players, you know. So I was thinking, you know, Ruben Diaz, I don't know how much he went for. I'm assuming it was a lot of money. See, but it's not really talked about in the light of City because City have no consequences to their spending. You know, they're going to spend every single window that they have to spend in. You know, I mean, the £100 million that was paid for Grealish was followed up. You know, previous to that, Pep said it was impossible for them to go and do any business. And along with that £100 million for Grealish, they actually tried to buy Harry Kane for £100 million on top of that. So, you know, there's just there's no consequences to City spending. So I don't really think it's really talked about that much. Whereas, like, you know, £75 billion and a centre back from Southampton. For a Liverpool side, that's huge news.
Yeah.
But Van Dijk delivers right away and continues to deliver, you know. Harry Maguire crumbles under his price tag. Everything he does, every single mistake Harry Maguire makes is, you know, broadcast to the masses, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm a Harry Maguire hater, as you would say. No, I'm not a hater. I just think it was an overpriced move. I think Manchester United bought him to stop him going to City. I think, you know, I think if Harry Maguire goes to City and performs the same way as Manchester United, he's just dropped. He's out of the squad, you know?
Yeah.
And he's probably moves on a free or a whatever, you know? Whereas City continuously United continuously try to get that player that they've seen glimpses of Leicester.
Yeah. I've just been thinking for the past minute or so of players that have gone for huge amounts of money and that have continued their progress, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
It's like...
It's not a long list.
No, it really isn't. You know, you've mentioned Van Dijk there, £75 million. I think he's the only one that really comes to mind, and that's only because you've mentioned him. Thinking Maguire, Paul Pogba, Gareth Bale, Grealish, they're the first ones that come to mind for me, and they're flops, aren't they? I'm trying to think of more.
Lukaku would probably be considered as a flop.
They just don't perform to these price tags. So it'd be really interesting, actually. There's got to be a study out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And if there isn't, some university listening needs to get on it.
Someone a lot smarter than us.
Yeah.
that needs to do that. But I think we'll move on. I think it was a great semi-final. Manchester City Liverpool continues to deliver every time we see them. And like I said in maybe the past few podcasts, I do believe this is their era, the era of these two teams. I know it's not the like sort of like hard tackling derby of, you know, United Arsenal or whatever, but I still think it's got a lot of its own qualities, just mainly on the football that's been displayed. I think, you know, there's some gorgeous football being played between these two sides. And I think, you know, every other side in world football just has to live. That just has to live with them, you know. Even your Bayerns, Barca's, and Real Madrid's, Chelsea's, whatever. Like, it's fantastic. PSG's as fantastic as those sides are. I think this is the era right now of Liverpool and City. And it could be for maybe the next two, maybe 3 years if they stretch it out a wee bit. City will continue to progress for sure. City will always be this monstrosity monster, just buying all the best players in the world machine. If they go get Haaland next year. You know, it's...
Yeah, this is what I was saying to my dad when watching the game, you know, that Gabriel Jesus chance that Grealish put through for him. If that's Haaland, it's 3-2 instantly. And it's not even a question. He buries that chance.
he's a player I back to do well wherever he goes.
Mm.
I back him to do well. I see the boy's mentality. He's kind of don't give a fuck. It's a very similar, maybe dulled down a little bit from a Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's like Zlatan believed in himself so much that even when he like came close to failing, he just didn't believe it was a possibility that he could ever fail. You know, and I kind of feel that Haaland has a wee bit of that about him. I think, like, if you watch Haaland's interviews, he has a very sort of like blasé. He's not really cared about the press. He just kind of believes in his own abilities. And when he trains, his training videos are like, trains like an absolute animal, that boy. Like, he trains like he plays as well. See, like, a lot of people talk about, anytime the conversation comes up, like when I'm listening to radio or whatever.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And it's like, who is the best player you ever trained with or something when they're asking a professional? Steven Gerrard would come up time and time again by an English player saying he was the best player they ever seen trained because he trained like how he played with a lot of intensity. I think Haaland trains like that as well. So I just back him to succeed wherever he goes. So I'm hoping he doesn't go to City. Alrighty-o. Let's finish up with some of the Premier League results. Obviously, we're not seeing the game. These are the 3 o'clock kickoffs, and I didn't watch Spurs Brighton either. I was away out for a beard trim. I know. I just mentioned how fantastic I look. but there was a few games played the game. Brighton beat Spurs. Man United just got by Norwich. Brentford beat Watford. That's a big blow to Watford. That for me is the nail in the coffin. I think they really had to sort of win those games of the teams that are within grasping reach of where they are on the table. Not that Brentford are in grasping reach, but like, you know what I mean? The sort of bottom third of the table, they really need to get 3 points from those games if they wanted to make any sort of great escape happen. Southampton beat Arsenal as well. So that race for top four is kind of blown right open.
Yeah, well and truly. And it's almost as if nobody wants it. Spurs just weren't at the races at all against Brighton today. I watched the game. And it's weird. Because I think they weren't that good against Villa either last week.
Mm-hmm.
And we battered them in that first half. And then the second half, they just had chances and scored them.
Mm.
They had a chance in the first minute and scored it. That's how the game went against Villa, really. I thought we were much the better team, particularly in the first half. Once they got that second and then the third and then the fourth, it was a bit game over. But yeah, Brighton just didn't allow Spurs any chances at all. And they eventually got the goal that they fully deserved in the 90th minute. And Arsenal as well, losing again to a team that they should be winning.
Southampton are on the beach as well, man. They have nothing to play for. They're just kind of thinking, let's just end this season. Maybe James Ward-Prowse is like thinking, maybe I can bag a couple more free kicks and progress towards that, whatever it is, the most free kicks scored in the Premier League or whatever. But that is actually all they have to play for right now. They're not in any competitions. They are in no danger of getting relegated yet. They cannot possibly reach European football. So it's just about finishing as high as they can. And, you know,
that mid-table from about eighth down, from ninth, which is Leicester, down to about 15th, which is Newcastle. It's just a minefield as to where any of those teams are going to finish. Because Villa are now 14th. I mean, we've got two games in hand on Brentford. Every mid-table is so close, it's ridiculous, and the amount of money that you get for just finishing a place or two higher is just crazy for some teams, isn't it? So that's going to be interesting to see how that plans out. I'm not really too fussed where Villa finish. It'd be obviously nice to finish as high as possible, but I think people sometimes get too addicted to finishes where you finish in the table, especially for mid-table sides. I mean, we've not got anything to play for. I think we'll get a few wins towards the end of the season. But yeah, getting back to fourth, it keeps West Ham in it as well. I can't see them doing it, if I'm being totally honest, because There's 6 points I'm not between them and Spurs.
Never in a million years am I ruling that out, man, saying? Because of in terms of consistency, they might. I know. I understand that they all been there on the table and they're West Ham, right? Mm-hmm. But I think West Ham play on their day maybe the best football of those teams competing for top four. Like on their day, West Ham can if they're really on it, play some really fantastic football.
Yeah, I agree. When West Ham are on it, like you say, they play some fantastic football.
They don't have the depth for these clubs though. Well, speaking of depth, I mean Arsenal that squad is so thin. Without the fullbacks in that system, you know, that the absence of Tomiyasu and Kieran Tierney is dreadfully felt in this side.
Yeah.
Tommy, you didn't realise how important Tomiyasu and Kieran Tierney are to this side until you're missing without them. I've not seen this match, but I'm going to assume that Southampton had a lot of joy in the wide areas of the pitch. Just to guess, that's going to be my guess.
I've no idea, so I can't help you on that one. But just touch on West Ham again quickly. They're still going to be having an eye on the Europa League, and they will fully believe that they can go all the way and win that competition, which is then
be huge
an automatic,
history.
Yeah, which is then an automatic Champions League place anyway. So I think they're going to have one eye on the league, but also I think their main focus now is the Europa League and having players fit and ready to compete against
Frankfurt.
Who is it? Frankfurt. That's one.
That's going to be the priority. You back yourself for the cup, innit? Too many variables going for the top four. If I was Moisey, exactly. man, I would rotate 11 players in the game previous to Frankfurt. I really would. Because, right, he's got to see it, right? There's what is standing in front of David Moyes in Champions League football right now? At the table, it's Spurs, Man United and Arsenal. That's what stands in front of him, right? In the Europa League, all that stands in front of him between Champions League football is Frankfurt, potentially Leipzig or Rangers. I know what I would put. If those two lanes, and then you could pick one to go in.
It's two one-off games as well. Two one-off games. Anything can happen in those games. You've got to. That's got to be their focus. I think it certainly is. To be honest.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, we'll watch Match of the Day tonight and we'll see the highlights for this game, and we'll probably look on Sky Sports to see the extended highlights. But, I mean, these teams, Man United, Spurs, Arsenal, at any point in this season, they've really all had the chance to nail on top four. Arsenal probably, if they maybe got a wee bit of depth in the January window, then they might have been able to continue that momentum. That they were on a good run that they could have nailed this for. Spurs are just so up and down. Sometimes they're amazing, sometimes they're horrendous. I mean, it's a strange one. They're playing a Conte system without maybe the quality that is needed for a Conte system. So at Manchester United, they're just fucking, I don't know, man.
They were so lucky to get a result against Norwich, really. If you see the goal, the free kick that Ronaldo scored, Tim Krul has got to be doing better with that. How he doesn't save it is just beyond me.
Cristiano Ronaldo hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. We're going to come back tomorrow, Billy Boy. And once we do these games, we'll be able to come back and talk about them a little bit more in depth. And there's some football we'll be played tomorrow as well, along with the FA Cup. But until then, that is going to do us. Billy, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure as always, mate. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the listeners. Until tomorrow, cheerio, bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.